Enfield City Council meeting is Monday, February 8th, 2016, 6:30 p.m.
I'd like to call this Enfield City Council meeting of February 8th, 2016, to order. Would you all please rise for a short invocation and the Pledge of Allegiance? I'd like to have everybody bow their heads and say a short prayer for the wisdom and direction of this city. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You may be seated. Item 1.4 is the roll call, and all city council members are present. So we'll move to item 1.5, citizen input. This is where citizens have an opportunity to address the Othello City Council with regard to any issues that they may have. Is there anyone here tonight who would like to address the council? Please raise your hand. Okay, seeing none, we'll move to item 2, the approval of tonight's agenda. This time I entertain a motion to approve our agenda tonight.
Make that motion.
Second. We have a motion made in second to approve tonight's agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 3, consent agenda. I entertain a motion tonight to approve our consent agenda.
I'll make that motion.
Second. We have a motion made in second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll move to current business 4.1. Confirmation to appoint Dean Novitsky to the Planning Commission. Dean Novitsky made application on city application for boards, commissions, or committees. She also, as you recall, was a citizen activist in helping to the council, lobbied the council, and brought people to lobby the council here earlier. With regard to having chickens and rabbits within the city. And so now she has indicated an interest in being on the Planning Commission. We have an opening. Colton Anderson has resigned. He's moved out of town. And so we need to replace him on the board. And Dina wants to serve. And so I would like to appoint her, but I need confirmation by the council. So I need a motion.
I'd make that motion.
We have a motion made and seconded. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll move to item 4.2, ordinance to amend OMC 9.08 titled parking. And Police Chief Schenck, we had asked you to bring back some changes to that parking ordinance when you presented it before.
Okay. Yes, sir. Mayor and Council, we had agreed that we'd bring this back to the consent agenda, but the changes that I'm actually recommending now are outside of the scope of what we discussed, so I wanted to bring that to your attention. All of the other changes that we've recommended, I think we've now presented this is the third time. The only change here is we moved back the hours, so it is two to five for the parking restriction along Main Street and First Avenue. But we expanded the months to November, December, January, February, and March, and that is for snow removal, and that's after consulting with Public Works. That is all the other changes we've discussed.
And 2 to 5 was acceptable with Public Works?
This is working with Public Works. This is what Terry thought was workable.
Thank you, Chief. Is there any questions, Council? Okay. Council, do you want to approve this ordinance? I need a motion.
I make a motion.
Second.
Motion's been made and second to adopt the Othello Municipal Code Chapter 9.0 titled Speed Limits Hereby Amended. Parking ordinance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Then we're going to move to item 4.3, ordinance to amend Othello Municipal Code regarding code enforcement. Is that you, Kelly? You're going to? Okay.
Good evening, Council. So presenting to you an ordinance tonight that we started, I believe, towards the end of the summer, or maybe midsummer. It went through a number of iterations with staff. They worked really closely with me to review and revise and get overhaul the code enforcement system so it works for Othello, it works for the various departments. We got input from Public Works, of course, from the police chief and our administrator, Mr. Ferris. I think we've come up with something that will work very well for the city and will work better than what we currently have. It'll be much more efficient and give the city additional tools to be able to address some of the code violations, particularly zoning violations that we have in the city. Some of the highlights of what we did was we codified the fines, made it easy to determine what the fines and penalties would be for violations. We put in provisions expanding the city's authority to be able to use voluntary compliance agreements is what we call them. But they're just voluntary procedures by which somebody who's in violation of the zoning code can work with the city to bring that into compliance. We consolidated different provisions of the code. What had happened before was you had different areas of the code had different enforcement mechanisms, and they related back to each other a lot of the times. So it would be difficult for one of our citizens or even staff to identify what the appropriate procedure would be in certain circumstances. So what we did is we took all of the code violations relating to, unless they were a very special or unique violation, and put them into this code enforcement structure. The other thing, interestingly enough, and I can't remember the exact date, but before I was the city attorney, the council had amended the development code or the code enforcement provisions, and they changed the chapter number from 1.20 to 1.30. I think at the time it was convenient because you could just get rid of one and add another. Problem was all the other codes that referred to the code enforcement mechanism, those weren't changed. So they were still referring to the old chapter 1.20. So what we've done is gotten rid of 1.30, we're replacing it with 1.2. And so all those prior references to 1.2 are now going to identify the correct code section. And of course, we've entered the additional provisions that I told you about. The other one that is a substantial change is how the city deals with non-conforming uses. And I'll talk about it in a second. Now, one thing I do want to bring up before I forget, if you look at page 15 of the ordinance, if you have it, this is something that was brought up by one of our citizens, Bob. I'm sorry, Bob, I can't remember your last name.
Bob Carlson.
Bob Carlson, I'm sure everybody knows Bob. But if you look at page 15 under section 1.20.290 under civil penalties in critical areas, it states the compliance provisions for critical areas are intended to protect critical areas and the general public from harm to meet the requirements of Chapter 36.70A RCW, the Growth Management Act. That goes on further, but what I do suggest a change after talking with Bob, because I do believe that it could create some confusion. The city is not a Growth Management Act, or the city's not a Growth Management Act city. And I don't want to create any confusion in somebody reading this code that Othello is a Growth Management Act city, and this language in here is not necessary to carry out the intent of the ordinance. So to avoid that confusion, I would recommend striking out the provision, the part where it says to meet the requirements of chapter 3670 RCW print Growth Management Act. It's not necessary for it to be in there. If we leave it in there, there is no harm. It does not subject the city to the Growth Management Act, but it would get rid of, by striking it, you would get rid of some confusion down the road. And it's not necessary to be in there. It makes sense to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So that was a good suggestion for Mr. Carlson. But looking at one thing that's worth talking about, because we had discussed it with council at some length, is on the last second to last page, page 22, and it has to do with the non-conforming uses and how the city's going to go about remediating those when we have tenants on the property. So if you look at the new language, this is any residential use of the structure which either A, exists on a property on or before March 1st, 2016, and is in a non-conforming use, or is a non-conforming use of the zone in which the property is located. And then it goes on to say it can be allowed to remain indefinitely beyond the time limits established in the language just above, which currently exists, if the landowner meets some qualifications. One, enters into a voluntary compliance agreement, which we're now setting up, obtains the necessary permits and completes the work necessary to bring the property into compliance with all building codes, and ensures that any existing tenants on the property have substitute housing at no additional cost to the tenant while the owner completes the work. We also add a provision in here that provision only applies if it doesn't violate any provision of the Washington Landlord-Tenant Act or other Washington state law. I don't believe that it does violate the Landlord-Tenant Act. The reason being, this is completely voluntary. They don't have to do that. This is something extra that the fellow is doing that most cities don't do, which is allowing a non-conforming use to continue beyond the time period that the city otherwise allows, if they can meet these requirements and they minimize the impact to the tenants, which is particularly important in residential areas. So I mean, those are the highlights. It is a 23-page ordinance, so I imagine you may have some questions after you've reviewed this. Happy to answer any questions council may have.
Okay, it says here on page 23, on section 8, repeal of Federal Municipal Code Chapter 19, entitled Enforcement and Penalties, is repealed in its entirety, meaning that all of the previous ordinances that we operated to enforce our codes are now, this is going to replace it.
Correct.
Okay. And we've got all these different penalties, C1 civil infractions, and I think we've got up to a C19 civil infraction. When we do our codes, is it possible to put a infraction penalty list attached to our code, or is that just a separate document that we go back and refer to? Because I never seem to know what a C1 infraction is going to cost somebody, and I don't know what a C19 would cost anybody, nor really anything in between.
That is the table in our
It's in the table under the penalties.
But our website isn't working.
Yeah, and I don't have it in front of me.
It's the table within the
penalties. That's what I'm looking at. Yeah, it's
Chapter 2 on the
Okay, that's fine. Council, do you guys have any questions of Kelly regarding this new code enforcement? I know the committee, I want to thank the committee and the staff and Kelly for spending time on it. Wade?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just an addition here, just so everybody understands, that this is the first step, and you know, the committee met the other week, and we know we have to meet again to outline how we're going to start implementing this and what our plan going forward is. So, you know, the goal is not to put anybody on the street in the middle of the winter, obviously, but we're not putting anybody on the street, period, if we can help it. So there's an implementation plan that we have to work on for this. We're just going to start tomorrow. We may need another code enforcement officer. We're not sure yet. That may be something, or at least a part-time one. There's all kinds of questions that we still have to resolve. So this is step one of getting this problem resolved.
Council.
I have two questions, and kind of a deal killer for me on this, actually. The two questions are real easy. The first one is 1.20.100. And that should be like page 8 or something like that.
Yeah, it's on page 8.
Let's see, it'd be section E. To get the, to get any extension, it says it takes either, it takes both the authorized representative, a signature from the authorized representative of the city and the person who signed the original voluntary compliance agreement. Why is it going to take both of those? And what happens if the person who originally signed it isn't along with the city? Shouldn't it be, or couldn't it be just an authorized representative of the city?
Well, you do want, so you'll have a situation where, because the voluntary compliance agreement is an agreement between the city and the property owner, if you're going to extend that, you're going to want to have both parties sign. Particularly if there are going to be additional conditions. Usually what I can see is the city saying, okay, we will continue this, we'll get Reg an extension, but we need to see this timeline followed. By week two, you have to have X done, by week three, Y done. And so just the city granting it and signing it, it's not an agreement, all of a sudden it's not really an agreement. Just like usually you have an agreement, you have both parties sign.
Now, Kelly, I think what Corey's asking, if you read the sentence, it says by the authorized representative of the city, in other words, the person, let's say I was the one who signed it, yeah. And let's say in 4 years from now, and wasn't done, whatever, and I've retired, moved on. Well, I think what you're asking, Corey, is why can't we just have it more generic so that if it's, what I'm saying?
Okay.
Isn't that what you're asking, Corey?
Yeah, it's just the original person who signed it.
Well, that's the...
Well, that's the homeowner. That would be the homeowner. So the authorized representative, in this situation, if your city administrator is the person who's the authorized representative and your city administrator changes over time, the new city administrator would be the authorized representative. Yeah, this is meant to the property owner. And we could certainly put a clarification in that. I mean, that's a good point if somebody were to read it that way.
Well, when I read it, I guess I didn't read it right. I thought it was the original person who signed the complaint.
We could between the words and person, we could put the property owner or responsible property owner, and then cross out persons who signed the original voluntary compliance agreement. That could be a change that would kind of get rid of that ambiguity.
Okay.
That
I would recommend that we leave it as it
is. Because the authorized representative is sure the city administrator and mayor are authorized to do it, that can easily change. So it might be code enforcement, it might be the city administrator, it might be planning or building inspector. Depending on what the issue is, because this can be used on all different kinds of issues. So that authority is by this body to us. The second piece where it talks about the original signer. I think that's probably a good idea, because if that sign is gone, maybe that agreement goes away. But to hunt down property owners is sometimes very difficult for us, especially if it's out-of-town landlord or something. We may make this agreement with who we have and who we find. Maybe kind of hard to find some of these folks. We've been into that one of the properties down on the Broadway.
And I don't suggest that we change authorized representative. I think that needs to change because it is a very fluid term that and you really can't get much more general than that. But the persons who signed the original voluntary compliance agreement, if you have ownership, if the property changes hands while this is ongoing, you'd probably just be entering into a new voluntary compliance agreement. So if you want to change, though, so you want to implement some language to avoid any ambiguity that has to be the same authorized representative who signed the original voluntary compliance agreement, we can certainly introduce language that would take away any confusion on that.
Okay. My next question is it normal to, when there's any kind of legal proceedings, to send ordinary first class mail? It shouldn't be certified?
Well, you can, if the city wants to take on that obligation, the service, and so, and which one are you looking, which part are you looking at?
1.20.060. And that was for, it's on page 7.
Yeah.
And it's section A, A3.
So this has, you know, I've used this service provision under ordinances in other cities, and it's never been a problem. It really isn't for legal proceedings, there isn't a big difference between certified mail and first-class mail. And there's a practical difference, but from a legal perspective, there isn't. First-class mail is deemed to have been delivered within 3 days after it was, after it's postmarked, or after it's deposited in the mail. With certified mail, of course, you get a date of when it was delivered. Thing with certified return receipt requested is that the person has to sign for you to get that. So sometimes you can have people who will refuse to sign and won't get delivered. So that's, sometimes that's a problem that you run into with certified return receipt requested mail.
Okay.
But from a legal standard, or from a legal perspective, I've used that first-class mail service in the past, never had a problem with it.
Okay, and then the last one, which is the big one for me, is almost to the last page, it's 1.20.420, the right of entry. This one, I have a real issue with this one, because whether this is constitutional or not, I think people should still have the right, we're not to have somebody just come tromping around anytime they feel, without a warrant. And if you go, actually go back to 1.20.030 on page, section G on page 6, it talks about getting a warrant and all that with, or authorization. And even down there, that section, it says that if the property is occupied, that they'll get permission. I think they need to have a warrant or something, they should not just have permission to go on the property if it's unoccupied.
The only thing is, Corey, I mean, you'd have to take legal action every time, and some things don't require legal action, we're just going to have a conversation. And that's how you initially will start and make an approach when you go to somebody's property. But if it gets to the point where it's, you know, there's a conflict and it accelerates, well, then we'll take legal action. But I don't want to strap our code enforcement officer with the responsibility that every time they want to go to somebody's property, they've got to have a search warrant.
But I don't believe that they have the right to be going on anybody's property, taking pictures or videos or anything else.
Well, it has to do, but it has to do with if there was code violations.
Okay, they still don't have the right, whether it's a code violation or not, they still don't have the right to go on the property.
Well, we're going to be letting them know, we're not going to let them know that they're in violation, they're going to be made aware that we're changing the code. You know, we're trying to get up to compliance in the code.
But that's not what this says. This says the code enforcement officer making examination survey studies, take videotapes, take pictures, audio recordings. I don't believe that they have the right to go on anybody's property without a warrant and do any of that.
Bill, can you help us?
If it's something that they can do from the street, that's one thing, but I don't believe they have the right to go on somebody's property and do it.
Okay, so let's hear from our attorney.
So this is a common provision in code enforcement ordinances. Usually, what the practice is that if your code enforcement officer will do as much investigation as they can from the street. They'll take pictures, they'll do whatever they can from the street. Usually, they will go and knock on the door. They don't go in, they never go inside the property, but they'll knock on the door, talk to somebody, and ask for permission to look around. If that's denied, then usually your code enforcement officer is going to go through the other, you know, other avenues that are available, whether it be search warrant or whatnot. You know, there's nothing in the law that prevents somebody from taking photographs, videotapes, audio recordings, or other evidence that you can get from not being on the property. Again, this is not a, it's not a criminal statute. It's a civil statute. That's another consideration. If the city or if the council is concerned with that provision, we can certainly change this to give the code enforcement officer some flexibility that is needed. I mean, you certainly don't want any code that is going to prevent the code enforcement officer from doing things that they could from the street. Anything that's an open view is fair game.
Yeah, I'm fine, totally fine with it from the street. Where my problem is going on the property. That's where I have an issue from.
Well, I think, Corey, the last sentence says, if an owner, occupant, or agent refuses entry, the city may seek an administrative or criminal search warrant. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Kelly, that means the rest of this is predicated upon them voluntarily letting us in there. So if a code enforcement officer drives by a house in the alleyway located off of wherever and sees this place and says, oh, this looks, you know, whatever, then we'd send a letter that said, we've noticed that you're going to have occupants in this structure that's out, possibly out of compliance. We would like to enter your premises and inspect it. And based on, just like Angel was saying, you know, we're trying to correct this and get it up to speed. And that's one of the things we have to figure out is a letter that says that. Then if they refuse, then we have just cause then, I guess, to get that warrant. We can't do it without their permission. That's what it implies there. We can't do it without their permission. But from the street, we can take pictures, do videos, whatever. So that's what it seems to me. So I think that it looks like it covers. I'm not no lawyer, obviously. But,
no, well, I do believe it is covered because you do have the license if it's occupied. And that doesn't mean that a code enforcement officer can be sneaky and wait till the homeowner leaves and then go on and do whatever they want. I mean, that's not what it
right.
means. Is somebody generally living there? Or is this an abandoned piece of property or is it an occupied piece of property? That's number one. And so, but the last sentence does require the city to seek permission. If they're denied permission, they have to get an administrative or criminal warrant.
But Corey does make sense in a way. Sorry, Kelly.
That's okay.
Because, you know, the first initial walk up to the property and wanted to talk to them about the structure back there, they're going to say, hey, you know what? Get out of here. I don't want you guys in here. So then we take, you know, other measures to go in there. But it's going to happen. Not everybody's going to let you in freely. Come on in. Check me out. You know, right. Get me up to code. That's not going to happen. So there's going to be some measures that we have to take after that because they're not willingly letting us go in there. And it's going to happen. It's just bound to happen. So, but you do make sense of what you're saying. But we're not going to go in there. We talked about it. We're not going to be going in there and forcing ourselves in there and saying, you know what, we want to go in there. We want to check the place out. But we have to understand that that is going to happen. They're not going to let them in.
Yeah, go ahead.
I look at these and how we can apply them. So in this case, we went through this a few times. A law enforcement officer could not go onto that property without a search warrant and do this because it's criminal. Being civil, being a code violation, it's the law. And that's why, you know, I share the same concerns. I'm very strong on the Constitution. As I look at this and how this would be applied, and that's where some of what Councilman Garza is saying would come into effect. Our code enforcement officer driving down the street sees a new construction, knows that there is no building permit for it. If she then approaches them and says, hey, can I look? And they say, no, but stop work order right now. Stop. You want our approval, you give us permission to inspect it.
Yep.
It's a work order and there's no approval.
She may ask if they have a building permit. Do you have an active building permit with the city of Othello or the county? No. If she gets the response, no, I do not, then she can ask them to stop work.
She can do an immediate stop work order they keep working, their fines start stacking up.
But are you talking on the new structures that are going up?
Talking new structures, or talking anything that looks non-compliant.
Being built onto a...
The locations that we have that are non-compliant are, many of them are very easy to tell are non-compliant. They look like two apple bins pushed together with some plastic visqueen across the top and three people are living in it. That kind of stuff, she says, I mean, that's unacceptable. She notes, flags it, I mean, or puts, tags it. And they have to then prove that they've got building permits, that it's compliant. And if they don't want to give us that, then they're not giving a certificate of occupancy or a, you know, approval of the construction, and so they can't occupy it. If they continue to occupy it, it's like some of these other places that we're dealing with lately, we flag them, do not occupy. And if you, especially this last one that was quite a pain for us, we weren't given entry. So we had to, when we had a legal reason to be there, then we can take pictures, then we can, yes, as long as I'm not illegally coming onto your property, as code, we can do that. We're not going to come in somebody's house. That's absolutely unacceptable. And nor are we going to go get an administrative, I mean, I'm going to tell you, right, probably not going to get an administrative civil warrant. If we can't get a criminal search warrant, it's a lot of work to get on its own. This could be, you know, quite a bit harder. If they won't give us entry voluntarily, we're going to use the tools that we have that are built into this to push the issue legally. If they still won't give us permission, we're just going to make it non-movable. And you know, the other kind of situations I could think of is you drive along, you see weeds standing over an 8-foot fence. It's like, okay, you take a picture from the road, that's good enough. If I can walk up and look over the fence, or find a venue where I can get a little higher and look over, then I've got what I need legally. And I can deal with it that way. So I say 99% of the time we have the ability that we need. The guidance that I've given Heather Miller is we're not going to legally enter anybody's property. And something like this is, you know, we're on that gray area where I'm not real comfortable. As a cop versus code enforcement, as a cop, I have to have a really good reason. Otherwise, my case is wrong. Civil is much different.
She doesn't fall under the... She falls different than a police officer when it comes to that?
She's a different commission level. She's actually a special commission. So she can only enforce these types of laws. She can't, and dog laws. She can't enforce criminal laws.
And she falls under a different set of rules?
She's a different commission level completely. Where, you know, she is a good witness for criminal stuff, but she can't actually do the charging. She doesn't try the case. If we have a criminal type issue, yes, she falls under different rules on that. She can only enforce civil stuff. And that's, in this case, it's all code violations, including the, like, dog stuff. If it comes to requesting charges on that, the only criminal that she can do on that, requesting to our court, is vicious dogs and stuff like that.
So if somebody doesn't want to come into compliance, then she makes you aware of it then? And you write the citation, and how does that work?
She talks to me on all the difficult cases. She brings those to me. We discuss them. If she knows that it's going to be difficult, the non-compliance have been the most difficult since I got here. But we also had, you know, a really significant practice, one that we've been working on for months. And now I think everything that could have gone difficult on that did go difficult. That's why I actually support the first possible letter instead of the registered letter, because they're not signed for it. So we end up having to publish it in the newspaper for weeks. But the difficult cases, she does come to me, we discuss them, and I give her the guidance, you know, I hope good advice, so that we're doing things ethically and very well.
And one more thing I'd like to add. There's nothing in the proposed code, this proposed code, this 1.20.420, that would allow anybody to actually enter somebody's home without a warrant. You know, so they can enter upon the property at a reasonable time. At most, that allows them basically to walk onto the property, up to the front door, knock on the door, seek further permission. If they're denied, they have to go through the other procedures. And as Chief appropriately pointed out, if they're work, if they're performing work on there that is subject to a work permit or some type of city approval, then if they don't let anybody on to inspect it, the practical reality is they're not going to get their approval. But if the council has concerns, we can certainly come back and word this to where the council is comfortable.
No, I'm fine. You did a good job explaining everything.
I just have one question. You spoke about the sale of the property. Is there any way possible to prevent the sale of a non-compliant property legally when it's in violation of code?
Well, I mean, you can't really illegally, you can't put a order out that prevents them from selling the property. Now, if you have a property, the reality, though, is that most property is purchased with a loan. And so, you know, your banking institutions have their underwriting process. And if there's a big problem with the property and a loan is necessary to get that for the purchase of that property, the sale's not going to go through because the the lending institution doing their due diligence is going to uncover that. The other thing that can happen is, I want to find the right provision, make sure I'm looking at it. So, you know, one method or tool that the city has is when you are abating a violation or you have a civil violation and you're going to enforce it judicially, the city can cause a lien to be placed on the property. And that's another thing that's going to really hamper a sale. That's going to be triggered right whenever they do their title search. Also, if you have a proceeding, if you filed any kind of action against the property, again, that's another thing that's going to be hit on the title search. So as long as the purchaser is going doing their due diligence, they should know that the property has issues, particularly if a lender's involved.
Okay.
So I have a question here. So we're working towards getting these structures up to code, right? And I don't know if we discussed it. Are we going to keep allowing structures being built behind the homes?
No.
I remember in our last meeting, are we going to stop that?
Yeah, we're going to stop.
And if we are, is it, do we have to put it in here?
No. I think that Phil can answer this question more directly, but I feel that with what we have already in place today, that if somebody's building something, we're pretty much aware of it, and they need to prove that they've got a building permit issued by the city.
So we are going to allow it, you say?
No, when the committee talked a while back, not the last one, the consensus was to stop this. That was the whole purpose of doing this, to stop this and stop allowing this.
Well, the city never allowed, never in our code to allow it.
That's correct, but this is not a vehicle to allow, to answer your question. It's not a vehicle to allow
that's
more.
That's what I remember, that we were going to stop it. We're going to try to ask this question. I don't know if it has to be on this, in this ordinance or not.
When we see these going up, or after, and remember we talked about that we're going to do a lot of publicizing this in the paper and everything else to make sure, and of course the word will get out, that here's the line in the sand, you know, that anything after this date is not going to be allowed, and if you don't bring up compliance, it's not going to be allowed, which means that that's it, line in the sand, period. And so we will encourage people to self-identify. They've got these units behind their houses and stuff, because if they self-identify, then, okay, they're below that line in the sand, you know? Anything above that.
Well, then we don't issue permits. But it doesn't have to be in here.
We don't issue a permit for, now, we have in our code for mother-in-law apartments, I believe, if I remember correctly. And that's, that there lies the rub. We may want to examine that as we're...
We're all going to have mother-in-law.
Yeah.
But again, that has to be built to code.
Mm-hmm. And right, yeah.
So there's a couple things to answer your question, that what we have in place. This ordinance will help us prevent any new non-compliant construction. Old
previous non-compliance, this sets a March, I think it was a March 1st deadline.
Yeah.
Anything before that, anything after that's new construction. As we see those, the guidance that I've given Heather is do not allow them. Now, unfortunately, we haven't been able to enforce that because that was reliant on our building official. We now have a contract with the county for a building official that we hope is actually going to do the inspection, stop it like it should be stopped, and force them to come in and get a building permit and do it right. The only issue that I see in this is if, for example, we find one, we say this is a non-compliant, and they say, well, it was built, before March, whatever, but they didn't get it, the non-conforming, the permit or whatever, the voluntary compliance permit. We're going to be finding those over the next few years and forcing them with a voluntary compliance agreement to get it done. I forgot. We'll deal with that. But this will prevent any new non-conforming as long as we're doing our jobs.
I think there will.
You said any new non-compliance, right?
Yes.
But if you say that, in the other hand, that you're saying that we can, if it's in compliance, right?
Then it wouldn't be non-conforming.
Well, they would have to come in and get a permit, and
so we're allowing it.
Have the right.
So we're allowing it.
Have to
then.
Be in the right zone. They would have to be,
Then again, that's compliant.
Yeah.
That's not non-compliant. Any new construction has to be done to code.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. So we are allowing it as long as it's in compliance.
Yes, new construction as long.
Okay, we're not allowing mother-in-law. We didn't agree on that.
Well,
am I right or wrong?
That would be addressed in the building codes, not in this. This is for non-compliance for those shack apartments that are behind people's houses.
Yeah, what are we allowing more or come in? That's
no. What Gina's saying
that's
is
that's what we had talked about that we were.
No,
that's
I think
what we're trying to get
the
straight.
Purpose was not to allow anymore.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
We're in compliance with the zoning. And everything else. So a lot of these aren't even.
So anybody coming in that wanted to build something like that is going to have to go through the building department, through Travis.
They're going to have to
prove that they're in the right zone, that they've got enough space, that they've got all of the things to code. And if it aligns with what we want for building within the city. So
we are going to allow it. We're going to put some stipulations.
Well, if you qualify for it?
He wants a specific answer.
The specific answer is no.
Yeah.
Specific answer is no.
Because that's what I wanted to hear.
No.
Because that's we got two things going on here.
We're not allowing new construction. We're not allowing any more non-conforming housing. It has to conform.
Yeah.
So
that means it has to meet the zoning requirements. It has to. In the code there, if you're going to build another dwelling on your property, there's a term that says you have to have X number of square feet available. Most lot sizes aren't large enough to provide that square footage required.
So then
it would be shut down immediately and said, no, you do not have, we will not issue a building permit for that. And if you continue to build, you're in non-compliance and you will be penalized with. Yeah.
But somebody coming in and building a new house may have.
It's nothing to do with new houses, with the structure in the back. If your lot's big enough.
If your lot's big enough.
It's going to happen.
But you got to park things.
That's what I'm trying. That's what I'm getting. It'll be difficult.
Yeah.
It will be very, very difficult. Because of all the issues, they're going to have a separate water meter, they're going to have a fire inspection, they're going to have separate parking, they're going to...
That's for a dwelling we're talking about right now, correct? Because like if I want to put a three-car garage on the back of my house...
We're just talking dwellings.
Yeah, we're just
talking about dwellings, people would live in.
It would be when you're trying to convert that three-car garage into three living spots. That would come.
All right, I'm good. That's a totally different part of the building code.
Okay. Any further questions of Kelly?
Good.
Okay.
All right.
Phase one, adopt this ordinance. Need a motion.
I'll make a motion to adopt the ordinance.
I'll second it.
With the changes.
With the changes that Kelly indicated.
That you guys, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, we have a motion made and seconded to adopt this ordinance with the changes recommended by City Attorney Kelly Conkright. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Move to item five, unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before the city council tonight?
I guess, got a question, I guess, for Wade, maybe. How are we coming on getting a, when somebody comes to town with a new business, they need to get their permits?
Yeah, yeah. I thought about that the other day.
Yeah, good question. Travis ain't here, but he can give you a better update. But I know he's working, he's found a, there's, the county has a program that we're going to adopt. And it's going to cost us like $3,000. Don't quote me on that price, but it's going to cost us a little bit to get in with them to do that. So yes, we're almost there.
So that you could actually, somebody that's wanting to come in and do business would have all of the forms in front of them that were required to?
I can't say with any confidence, John, on that, but I think that's where we're going, is that direction. Let me have Travis give you guys an update next time, okay? Because he's working that, so I'm making myself a note to.
Okay.
Yes, okay.
I had just talked to a couple new businesses and they were just, one of them was talking about coming in to get a permit for something.
And that triggers something else.
And then they come back in, oh, you need to do this, and oh, you need to do that. And
that should just be a checklist.
Yeah, it should just be.
Let me give you guys an update next time.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further unfinished business? Moving on to item six, new business. Any new business to come before the council tonight? Okay, the mayor has two announcements. The first one is I attended the interviews for the new superintendent of schools for Othello, and there's a reception tonight, started at 6:30 at the district conference building on Ash, and then again tomorrow night. So if you want to meet the candidates that the school board has selected, I would recommend that you go, whether you have kids in and maybe eventually grandkids would be in this, would be affected by it, but really important step going forward. The other thing is there was a meeting of the sister city at the Nazarene Church last week, and they have a committee has now been formed, and they're going to have their first committee meeting February 23rd. That's here at City Hall at, I believe, 6:30 p.m. So anybody who wants to attend, find out what's going on, how we intend to continue that relationship with our sister city in Ghana. That's when we're having the next meeting. And with that, we'll move to item seven, executive session about ongoing litigation. And Kelly, how long, Wade, how long do you guys anticipate we'll need?
Depends on how many questions you guys ask. About 15 minutes.
Okay.
To start off with.
So at this time, I would like to adjourn to executive session at 7:20 p.m. for 15 minutes. And staff, if you could prepare the council chambers for executive session.
I want to ask Spencer to stay.
So you want Spencer to stay? Anyone else? Okay, the council comes back in session at 7:37 p.m. and having no further business to conduct, I will adjourn our meeting tonight at 7:37 p.m. Thank you.